I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Sarah Agard. She's executive director of Santa Fe Forward, and we're joined by Andres Mercado, who is a firefighter and paramedic. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Thanks.
So what is Santa Fe Forward?
Santa Fe Forward is a nonpartisan, nonprofit civic engagement organization, and what we do is we build power through community organizing, and we work to advance socially responsible policy in Santa Fe and try to get all Santa Feans across the community engaged in these important issues.
And so how do you do that?
We do a lot of field work, so it's a lot of going door to door throughout the week, just going to people's houses and trying to have meaningful conversations with them about important issues, whatever specific issue we're working on at the time, and it yields a lot of good results because face-to-face conversations are the best way to change people's mind and get them involved.
What are some of the issues you've worked on in the past?
In the past, well, Santa Fe Forward is a pretty young organization still, but it's been things like food trucks, getting more people aware of food trucks and environmental issues. Some of Santa Fe Forward's other work is creating community conversations, and so last year there were a few of those, one on Southside issues, one on growing Santa Fe green, and one on growing Santa Fe young, and some of our canvassing efforts were to spread the word about that and raise the level of conversation.
So when you go to people's houses and you've got an issue in mind, do you sometimes find that they're telling you what their issues are and what they would like to see?
Definitely, that definitely comes up, and it's one of our priorities to be listening as well as talking to people. So people definitely have priorities, and a lot of different things come up, and it gives us good ideas for what to work on in the future.
So one thing you're working on now is called the Community Protection Initiative. What is that?
Yes, it's a program proposed by the Santa Fe firefighters, and Andres has been spearheading that. And what it is it proposes to create a mobile medical unit within the fire department, and what it will do will be preventative in-home care for the most vulnerable populations in the community. They have a lot of different services that they do with that, and it includes things like medication checks, home safety checks, checking if there's any hazards in the house, connecting them to resources like behavioral health resources or any other sort of social service that might be necessary. And so there was a really successful pilot program that they ran, and so the proposal is to expand that program.
Were you involved, Andres, in the pilot program?
Yes, I've been involved with every aspect of CPI since its inception. The pilot program was one of them, and I have to say that Santa Fe, I'm very impressed with Santa Fe Forward's ability to get out and talk to people in the community. I think you guys were also behind the living wage discussion that happened some time ago.
Definitely.
So it seems that they're an organization that's really able to get the community voice into the larger dialogue, especially in this sort of politically disaffected time that we live in. It seems like it's so important to get people's voices heard. I just came from a union meeting from the fire department, and you know that's a very small group, and it's so hard to get people really involved and interested in issues that really impact us all on a day-to-day basis. And so I'm really happy that Santa Fe Forward is getting out and getting people involved in these civic issues.
Tell us more about your work as a paramedic. I mean, part of the reason for this program, as I understand it, is that there are people who would really be better served at home than going to the emergency room.
That's right. So the Santa Fe Fire Department has been around since 1880. We haven't changed our name, but our responsibilities have changed dramatically. So when you ask people, what does your fire department do, most people answer, you mean besides putting out fires? And, you know, that's, I mean, I've been asking a lot of people that question, and that's typically the answer that I get. And And what I've learned is that the fire department is really an enigma. The people know that it exists. We're all happy that it exists. It's there if you need it. You can always call, and we'll show up at your door. But no one really goes further beyond that to ask, what does the fire department do? And as you may or may not know, and your listeners may or may not know, most of the calls that we respond to are not fires. They're actually medical emergencies. So last year we had around 13,000 calls, and 10,300 plus were for medical reasons. So the fire department traditionally responded to fires and took on all these different responsibilities, from cats in trees and dogs in wells and people trapped in elevators and hazardous materials, bioterrorism. I mean, it seems like our plate keeps growing and growing, but those calls are so few and far between. And what we typically do on a daily basis is run on what are called emergency medical service calls. But as anyone that understands the use of the emergency system throughout the nation would agree with, you can take the emergency right out of that term. It's really medical services. A lot of the people, even though we do respond to heart attacks and strokes and shootings and stabbings and major traumas and overdoses and all sorts of things that are emergencies, a huge chunk of our calls for medical help are either issues that illnesses or injuries that could have been prevented, or not truly emergencies, but they're urgencies or problems or people that are disconnected, as Sarah said, from social or primary health services. To answer your question, a paramedic's job is really multifold, but it's the CPI. What CPI is trying to target are those calls that we feel are should not result in 911 and calls to 911 and use of emergency resources, not because we don't want to take people to the ER, but because I feel that many of the folks that get put through that system, they're like square pegs going through round holes. It doesn't work for the patient, it doesn't work for the system, it doesn't work for the community. So we're just trying to be adaptive and respond to the needs of the community.
Talk a little bit more about an example of a call from somebody who's not really hooked in as they might be to the system, and you know what that looks like, what the need really is. I mean, because you're here talking about trying to fill the need with the Community Protection Initiative, give us a couple of examples of actual calls you've done. I mean, obviously, without compromising anyone's privacy, but I bet there's a lot of similarity among them.
So how about an older gentleman who lives about three blocks from here, who called us many, many times for chest pain. We went to his house, talked with him, realized he has a very serious cardiac history and also has also struggles with substance abuse. He drinks every day. And he has several different doctors, an ER doctor, his primary care doctor, who he hasn't visited in years, and his cardiologist, who he hadn't seen in a little over a year. And this patient was receiving blood pressure medications, metoprolol, it's a medication to control your blood pressure, from two different doctors. So his primary care doctor was prescribing it, and an ER physician or the cardiologist. I can't remember who else had also prescribed it. So he was taking triple the amount of medication his primary care physician wanted him on. And few people reach out to these folks and try to get at the heart of the issues. Why aren't you refilling your medications? Why aren't your doctors talking to each other? Why? And this isn't about placing blame on any physician. It's an extremely complicated system, and it's very difficult for folks who have if you don't speak English, if you're in a wheelchair, if you don't have a car, if you don't if you have a little bit of schizophrenia. I mean, it compounds the complexity of the system, and it's very, very difficult. We have great physicians in town, great specialists, great nurses, everyone really working to take care of these people, but the system rarely comes together in a cohesive way for a lot of these folks. So we're just trying to find, this is really going to take a system-wide solution, but we're trying to figure out, where does the fire department fit into that solution? What contribution can we make? And we believe that is by starting with our most frequent callers and essentially advocating for them and listening to them. I mean, Sarah, you talked about listening to people when you go to their doors and hearing what they have to say. A lot of this is about hearing what the patients have to say and having a program that's in large part designed by these system outliers that aren't currently served properly by the system.
Have you done a calculation of what it costs to provide, to have basically an emergency services department providing non-emergency services? Like, do you have numbers on that?
I think Andres probably does.
Well, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid definitely have numbers for it, and Health and Human Services have numbers for it. And, you know, at the national level, it's extremely inefficient to care for. But, you know, this doesn't stop at just the emergency care. It's also the inefficiencies and misaligned incentives in primary care and so many other things. I can't give you specific numbers or, you know, we would have to dive so deeply into the statistics and diagnosis and have true information sharing in order to come up with that with clear numbers to show you what it costs in Santa Fe. But I can tell you that in 2013, 0.3% of the city's census population, so that's a total of 250 people, that's a tiny fraction, made up 18% of our 911 calls.
So
when you think about it, 18% of the time that fire department crews are running emergency medical calls, they're handling this small group of patients. So that's wear and tear on vehicles, that's employee time that's taken up where they're not able to respond to other emergencies. Emergency resources are very expensive because you have to have them 24/7 ready for the worst emergency. And if you're using that to handle situations that don't really require that level of service, then you're obviously not operating in a optimum system.
Well, right. And I mean, it sounds like some of those calls could be best handled by a doctor with a little black bag who goes and actually talks to somebody and talks them through whatever their medical issues are. And that's, a doctor in a car with a black bag is a hell of a lot less expensive than what you're talking about. I mean, gigantic trucks and ambulances and fire trucks and so on.
Yeah, the house call is something that we did away with. And, you know, back in those, it was a much simpler time. And I don't think we can go back to just having a doctor in a car visiting people at home. But there are models that are being very successful that are a variation on that theme. Back in the day, a doctor like that only had to deal with a very small geographic area, and he knew the families, and he knew their history, and he would be over for Thanksgiving. I mean, it was a different dynamic. So that wouldn't be scalable now. So you couldn't do that in Detroit. I mean, it would be impossible. So what CMS is looking for are scalable models, and a lot of that. Dr. Jeffrey Brenner in Camden, New Jersey, has an amazing program, the Camden Coalition of Healthcare Providers. And what they've realized is that there are, based on some work by Malcolm Gladwell and some other, writings by Malcolm Gladwell and a lot of statistical analysis, is that the only way to solve, or one way to solve this problem, one way to approach this problem, is to have doctors doing doctor stuff, which is making difficult decisions, talking to family about hard life crises, and looking at really complex issues. But a lot of the day-to-day stuff of taking a rapid strep test or taking vital signs or doing a lot of the routine stuff that a doctor does, that can be protocolized and handed off to someone, whether it's a nurse, whether it's an EMT, a community health worker, a promotora. I mean, there are so many different... So we should really be using each licensure level to its fullest potential. And currently, because of very complex reasons, and many of them due to reimbursement schedules through Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, doctors, no healthcare professional is really using their scope of practice to its fullest extent and being optimized.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, doctors spend half their time on the telephone with insurance companies instead of treating patients. And I mean, when you talk about the Community Protection Initiative and what you guys are doing, and by the way, ladies and gentlemen, if you're just tuning in, we're talking to Sarah Agard of Santa Fe Forward and firefighter and paramedic Andres Mercado. When you talk about a Community Protection Initiative, so let's say a 911 call comes in, and how do you know if it's from one of those 250 people who take up 18% of the city's resources in this area? And how do you, like, you get a call, how do you evaluate whom to send out to that house?
So the first phase of the program would be, would have less of a 911 face, would have fewer 911 facing services. So we would identify our cohort, by retrospectively looking at our data and figuring out who called in the last year or in the last 6 months repeatedly. Ideally, we would have real-time response data and we'd be able to identify these folks before they even become high utilizers. But initially, we would it wouldn't be the 911 call at that moment wouldn't trigger CPI's response. It would be a retrospective case review would look at our data, figure out who's called 911 frequently, and then we would go and work with them on a non-emergency basis.
Okay.
So we would work out, like Sarah said, medication reconciliation. So that's looking through their medication, sending that to a pharmacist, having them look for issues, home safety assessments, looking for common trip hazards and other hazards that cause injuries and illnesses. Like rodent infestation, utilities, et cetera.
Right.
So that ideally, at some point, we will grow into a robust enough program that when a 911 call comes in, it can get appropriately triaged. And not just for these high utilizers, but if someone calls and they have I am not a physician, so I wouldn't be the person writing these protocols, but there are models in other cities in the United States where they do triage at the dispatch center and they determine the most appropriate level of response. Sometimes they'll send a nurse or they'll send they'll connect a person with a taxi company. They're doing this in Fort Worth. They connect a person with a taxi company and make an appointment for them. The 911 dispatcher on the phone takes a phone call, triages it, determines that it's safe to send them to a primary care clinic, calls a primary care clinic with a patient on the phone, sets up the appointment, calls a cab driver with the patient on the phone, sets up transportation. The patient is seen at the primary care office. There's a follow-up phone call done within 24 hours. There's quality control measures in place. So it is being done in other places, and I hope that in the next few years we can work towards that. But initially, we would start doing non-emergency visits.
So what kind of personnel do you need to do those non-emergency visits, and what kind of training would they get that's different from the training they already have?
We need amazing people. That's the kind of people we need. We need just terrific people that can sit down with a horribly scarred individual that's been through adverse childhood events and just had a very, very difficult life for many different reasons, and sit down with a caring attitude and with enough training to do motivational interviewing and really get at the heart of the problems and understand boundaries and be respectful of these patients and understand the system very well, be trusted by other community providers. So that's what you need. I mean,
a
lot of these folks need
worker?
is a concerned nephew, someone who
yeah.
is really involved in their care and just says, "Do you remember what the doctors? Can you? Maybe they can't read the doctor's instructions, and someone that'll help them along." But so what we're hoping to do is foster this as community wide of being more open to understanding how to work with outliers, and that's a long process. But short term, we'll use EMTs. That already know these patients on a first-name basis, that are trusted in the community, that have a very clear scope of practice established by the state of New Mexico, the Department of Health. Those EMTs would provide the front-facing services to the patient-facing services to the individuals, and then they would be part of a multidisciplinary team of a physician, a pharmacist doing all the medication reconciliation, and a social worker, because there's such a heavy social work component. So the EMTs, paramedics, would essentially function as a sort of community health worker. It really is patient advocacy and care coordination and that sort of thing.
I think it's really telling and important that you said you put on the EMTs who already know these folks. I mean, relationships and trust building must be a huge part of being able to be effective with some of these types of what you call outliers.
Yeah, there are a few people who are trusted to walk into a patient's house in the middle of the night and go through someone's medicine cabinet and be trusted to lock the door and take care of the dog before we leave. And, you know, the fire department has for a very long time taken very good care of the community. and taken a lot of pride in serving the community well. And we hope that we can leverage that in order to help the community in yet another way.
So the Community Protection Initiative is based on models that are working already in other cities?
That's true. I don't think there's anything specifically like the Community Protection Initiative, because a lot of them are based out of hospitals and some of them are private. But what's great about this one is it's a public service through the fire department.
So it's a real city service, so that
right.
may be something where Santa Fe is breaking ground and other cities might follow our lead.
I think that's
really important. So there's healthcare is big business, huge business. It's 18% of our gross domestic product. It's an enormous amount of money that goes into the healthcare industry. And finally, because of, I think, a growing national consciousness, a lot of interests are aligned. One of them is financial. And like Sarah said, a lot of these programs that are using paramedics and EMTs in unconventional ways are based out of hospitals. Others are private ambulance companies. And they're all looking to achieve the triple aim. The Institute for Healthcare Improvement established the triple aim, which is improved population health, improved patient satisfaction, and reduced system costs. And the reason why, well, I don't want to put words in the private sector's mouth, but I think they're taking an opportunity to be fiscally responsible and maybe even profitable in the long term. And I think the importance of a city taking on an initiative like this is that there is no financial conflict of interest. This is truly a civic program to take care of our community's most vulnerable patients. And so there are programs that are fire department based. EMS, emergency medical services, EMTs and paramedics are being reimagined just like every single other healthcare profession right now. So there are other systems that are looking at similar services, and there are systems in. So San Diego Fire is doing a program. MedStar Mobile Integrated Healthcare in Fort Worth, Texas, is doing something. Mesa, Arizona has a big CMS grant for $12 million. REMSA, Reno EMS, has another CMS grant. There's everyone is, I think, reinventing themselves. And there are, I think Santa Fe is at the cutting edge. We are right up there with a lot of the other proactive communities, and I'm very proud to work under the direction of a visionary fire chief, a very supportive city council, and a mayor that's looking at transformation of how we provide services. There are a lot of similar programs out there. Most of them are in their infancy. And I think if I can put a plug in for a city that is doing amazing things, Camden, New Jersey, one of the poorest and most dangerous cities in the United States, has, not through the city, but through private practice physicians, the Camden Coalition of Healthcare Providers, is looking at bending the cost curve for these outliers. And they're doing a tremendous job, and they've been doing it for about a decade now.
So there's going to be a vote next week on Wednesday in the city council. What are you asking citizens to do right now?
Well, we've been working for about 4 months now to gather petition signatures throughout the city to show each of the councilors how much support there is in their district, and we've gotten 2,000 signatures now from across the city, and we're so grateful for all the community support. And so for the vote next Wednesday, it's a final budget vote that might change, but for right now it's scheduled for 7 p.m. at City Council next Wednesday, the 27th. And we're asking for community members to come out in support of the CPI, and if you have a personal story to tell, then you should come and talk during the public comment section and just bring it home for that vote.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe. Sarah Agard, who's Executive Director of Santa Fe Forward, and Andres Mercado, who is a firefighter and paramedic. If people want more information, do you have a website that they can look at?
Yes. We have plenty of information. It is at santafeforward.com, and there is contact information on there for me and We always want to hear from you.
Well, thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. If I can say one last thing, what Santa Fe Forward is doing is so important, and public input is so important, and the fire department would love to have input from the community of what they think their fire department should be doing. So we invite everyone to visit Santa Fe Forward's website and get civically involved, not just in this program, but in so many other important ones that are going on. Thanks.
Excellent.